This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Frank Morgan, a jazz musician with a beautiful sound and a dramatic story, died last Friday of colon cancer. He would have been 74 this Sunday. We're going to listen back to an interview and performance he recorded for Fresh Air. Morgan spent 30 years in and out of California prisons on charges related to a heroin habit, supported by forging checks and fencing stolen property. As we'll hear later, he not only continued to play in prison, he continued to perform. When he reemerged, he started recording again. In 1988, the jazz critic Francis Davis wrote, "At this point, there is no better saxophonist in the bebop idiom." I first spoke with Frank Morgan in August 1987, 2 years after his final release from prison. His parole had recently been lifted, which allowed him to make his first European tour, from which he'd recently returned. He left prison with his playing intact, having performed in prison bands for inmates and visitors. He told me that jazz musicians in prison had a special status.
In a sense, in a small sense, I was like a superstar in prison. People, everyone in the prison knew my name. Everyone mostly came to hear, us when we played, even though everyone wasn't jazz fans. But it's like the only game in town, For a person to go back time after time, like I did, when I could have stayed on the streets and played music and maybe got a chance to see the world, I think that there was a connection that, to me, having found a comfortable place in prison where I was like a superstar when on the streets I was just a small fish in a big pond. In prison, I was a big fish in a small pond.
You spent time in several different prisons. Were you always able to keep your saxophone?
No, there were times when I didn't have it. But most of the time I did. Most of the time it was made convenient. The prison authorities felt that good music helped to keep the prisoners peaceful. And we were used very much in that respect, There were times when the staff would ask us to put on a concert out in the yard if they felt there was a lot of tension. And it was effective.
Well, it must have been a pretty interesting music scene in prison, especially in California prisons, because there was, starting in the 50s, there was really a thriving West Coast jazz scene, and unfortunately, many of the musicians ended up with habits like you did and ended up in prison. Were there a lot of terrific musicians you got to play with while you were incarcerated?
Sure. Not a lot. There wasn't always a great number of good musicians there. But over a period of time, there were a lot of fine musicians that I was in custody with. And sometimes it was as good a band as you could, you'd want to play with on the streets. I mean, in a small, maybe there was enough guys to make up a sextet. of fine players, you know.
Could you practice anytime you wanted to, or were there rules about that?
Sure, there were rules. You know, we couldn't practice in the middle of the night or anything like that, but generally I could practice from any time from 7:30 in the morning until 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, and then we would go to our cells to be counted and to have dinner, and then come back out at 6:30 and stay out until about 10 o'clock. So, you know, we were able to get a good day's music in.
On the outside, jazz has become less of a popular music than it used to be, and it's really funk and rock that are getting played mostly on the radio and that sell the most records and get the most people coming for concerts. And I wonder if a similar thing happened in jail, if jazz became less popular in jail like it did in the outside world.
Well, yes, it did. I think that one of the things that contributed to me deciding to stay out of prison was they're no longer the musicians that play the kind of music that I appreciate. Most of them have gotten smart and are either died or have gotten smart and changed their lifestyle. So I guess the handwriting on the wall was that I no longer needed to be there if I couldn't even play the music.
So it's like a musical generation gap in prison for you.
Yeah, there's a whole different set of things happening that I no longer feel that I can relate to. The prisons and the people have become more violent, and being a nonviolent person, I don't need to be there. I mean, it's bad enough being in a free society with all the violence going on, but I think I need to be where I have some other options, you know.
The last time you got out, in 1985,
yes.
You must have really felt like you were on display, because everybody was watching you. Everyone wanted to hear how you sounded, and also people wanted to see if you could stay straight or not. I mean, I think, let's face it, when a really well-respected musician who had a habit gets out of jail, people want to know, can he make it this time? Was that a lot of pressure for you to be under, being musically tested and almost drug tested at the same time?
Oh, yes. It's still a pressure situation, but isn't life itself, you know, a pressure situation? It's certainly no more pressure than I had upon me trying to get together $1,500 a day, you know, to supply, you know, to buy the dope that I felt that I needed. You know, I have a set of problems now that are entirely different from the ones I had before. As an example, I mean, you know, now I have to maybe decide which agent to sign with, or which record company to enter into an agreement with. I like these problems a lot better, you know.
When you get out of prison on drug-related charges, are there people who hang around and try to tempt you back onto drugs? People who figure that you're vulnerable and they could make some money off of you?
Oh, sure. You know, I mean, I was a very good customer. I mean, I spent a lot of money. I didn't really cause a dealer a lot of problems. If I went to someone's house, I tried to be respectful of their family or, you know, or whatever their situation was. Sure, so people don't want to really give that up. But God willing, that's not going to happen. I've spent, you know, enough money sending some dope dealers kids to college, and I'm not sorry for it. I enjoyed what I did. I did it with gusto, you know, if you will. I did it until I completely got tired of it, and that's enough.
I think there's a real intensity in your playing now, and it makes me think about all the years you were in prison when probably one of the few real pleasures you had, maybe I'm wrong, was playing, because your freedom was taken away, but your instrument wasn't, and you could still play. And maybe that kept a certain intensity to your playing.
I certainly acknowledge the fact that in prison, the instrument was the thing that kept me sane, if you will. And the chance to play it, you know, kept me with hope. And now I have a chance to play it and to play it with fine musicians and go home, you know, after I play it. And have a nice home to go to, you know, with a nice piano and a beautiful partner to share life with. And I think that the intensity is just really starting, you know, because I really intend to play and to play my heart out.
Saxophonist Frank Morgan recorded in 1987. He died Friday. One of Morgan's fans is the detective novelist Michael Connelly. The audio version of Connelly's novel, The Overlook, features music by Frank Morgan. The reading is by the actor Len Cariou, who starred in the original Broadway production of Sweeney Todd.
The call came at midnight. Harry Bosch was awakened sitting in the living room in the dark. He liked to think that he was doing this because it allowed him to hear the saxophone better. By masking one of the senses, he accentuated another. But deep down, he knew the truth. He was waiting. The call was from Larry Gandel, his supervisor in Homicide Special. It was Bosch's first call out in the new job, and it was what he had been waiting for.
Harry, you up?
I'm up.
Who's that you got playing?
Frank Morgan, live at Jazz Standard in New York. That's George Cables you're hearing now on piano.
Sounds like all blues.
You nailed it.
Good stuff. I hate to take you away from it.
Bosch used the remote to turn the music off. What's the call, Lieutenant?
That's an excerpt of the audiobook version of The Overlook by Michael Connelly. We'll continue our tribute to saxophonist Frank Morgan after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're remembering the saxophonist Frank Morgan. He died Friday of colon cancer, just over a week before his 74th birthday. In December 1987, just a few months after my first interview with Morgan, we invited him to our studio for a live performance. From that performance, here he is playing Charlie Parker's Now's the Time. Ronnie Matthews is at the piano, Walter Booker on bass. Frank Morgan's 1987 Fresh Air concert gave me a second opportunity to talk with him.
You're in the East Coast on a set of performances that's wrapping up now, and just a few days ago you were performing in a show written by George Trow of the New Yorker magazine based on your life. You were playing the role of yourself and performing on alto in it as well. The show is called Prison Made Tuxedos. What is that a reference to? Where does the title come from?
Well, the title comes from an actual thing that happened in San Quentin. I mean, on a weekly basis, many of us that were in prison there that played music were in a band known as the Warden's Band, simply because we played on a show that was the Warden's show that showcased many musicians and jugglers and dancers and even some artists that paint were on the show. Every Saturday night, 1,500 to 2,000 people would come into San Quentin on the warden's invitation to tour the prison, see the gas chamber, you know, most people really wanted to see the gas chamber, I think. I think initially that was the case. Also, I think what developed was a lot of people decided that they would come back time after time to see whether Art Pepper was back, or whether I was back, or whether Frank Butler was back, so that the music was kind of on the musicians that, you know, kind of were on a rotating basis. So I think the people in the Bay Area got a chance to kind of say to themselves, wow, well, let's go over to San Quentin this night, you know, this Saturday night, because Art Pepper's back, you know, or Frank Morgan is back, or Frank Butler is back, or, you know, any number of
people treated it like a club.
Yeah, I'm saying Frank Butler and Art Pepper, because they've gone to the other side, you know, may they rest in peace and God bless them, you know. Rather than name the names of any people that are still alive, you know.
Did you used to perform in that band in tuxedos that were made in prison?
Yes, they were made in prison. They were dyed black from the original denim, blue denim material that we wore on a daily basis. They took them and dyed them black and got some bow ties, and the shoes that we wore were also black. You have to understand that San Quentin is a maximum security prison, so a tuxedo or anything that could be viewed as a suit was a very, very high security risk, and we could never keep them in our cells. It wasn't, you know. The shoes were taken away from inmates that had had someone in the shoe factory to make them some personal shoes. And they used to confiscate these from the inmates and then give them to us to wear on the warden show, take them back from us after the show was over.
On your new album of duets, you play the theme from the movie Love Story. But I was interested to read on the liner notes that this was something that you read in prison. It's a song you play beautifully, and I have to say it's a song that I'd really never taken very seriously myself, but you put so much heart into it. You play it so beautifully. You learned it in prison. What were the circumstances behind learning it? I was actually surprised to hear that.
Love Story, I saw the movie Love Story in prison, and I wanted to play the song. And it was a beautiful song, but I didn't want to play it in prison. Because at the time I saw the movie, there wasn't the kind of sensitive musicians in prison to play it with, number one. But it's kind of the thing that I wouldn't want to play unless I was free. So now when I play Love Story, it's my freedom. It's also a song that I play to my grandmother, who was buried in Milwaukee, that was asking for me on her deathbed when I was in San Quentin, and needless to say, they didn't allow me to go. And so when I had the chance last year, I went to Milwaukee for a family reunion, and I went to my grandmother's grave, and I played Love Story.
Really?
For her. And so every time I play it, it's for her.
Frank Morgan recorded in December 1987. He died Friday of colon cancer, just about a week before his 74th birthday. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.